Joe and Mike back again. BuildAssetsOnline.com. It's early. Wake up. We're going to talk today about Amazon FBA versus high ticket dropshipping. And we're going to be looking at browsing Amazon, browsing Google, and taking a look at what products are out there that people are selling and kind of give our opinion on how it's going to be to dropship some of this stuff versus sell it on FBA.
For sure. For sure. And we're going in with the focus of what's going to be best to make $10,000 a month profit. Because these Amazon businesses, you know, well, I don't want to start talking about it too much, but I got a lot to say about these Amazon businesses and where the money's going. So we're going to follow the paper trail today.
Where's the money going?
China.
Okay. So we're going in that direction.
You started pulling me there.
Well, all right. So let's talk a little bit about, let's do a quick overview of how Amazon FBA works and how high ticket dropshipping works. And these two business models can operate at multiple levels. So I just want to paint a picture of, and I guess we should focus this towards the beginner to intermediate, someone who's getting their feet into making money online, because if you're already banking online, then you're probably not going to be watching us anyway, and you don't need our opinions. So let's go back to the beginning. Amazon FBA, you typically, there's many ways to do it. You can wholesale stuff, but we're going to talk about private label for this. So you would have a product manufactured, slap your label on it, slap your brand on it, whatever, and then create an Amazon listing and sell it that way. So for example, this Arcana Arc bottle, I don't know if is this based off of like, I don't think this is I think someone just made this up. I don't think this is based off of like a TV show or anything, but it's a motivational water bottle. With times that like you got to be drinking this by a certain time, according to this water bottle. Like, you know, you got to drink half of it by 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. And I guess you got to fill it twice in a day. So anyway, someone just took this water bottle, slapped their brand on it, modified it a little bit. And, you know, if we scroll down, this is kind of like, I guess you could say something that's selling really well on Amazon because the bestsellers rank is 662 in sports and outdoors. And I wanted to run the ASIN into this calculator to see approximately how many sales it could make a month. But so someone or some business is essentially doing this. They're rebranding this water bottle, importing it, sending it into the FBA warehouses, and people are buying it and shipping it. So that, and anyone could do this. So if you've been exploring making money online for any decent amount of time, this is one of the most popular business models to do. And anyone can do it. But is it really the easiest and is it really the best? I personally do not think so. I've spent many years selling on Amazon, and while it can be very lucrative for sure, it can be great, There's some upsides to it. I personally feel that unless you're someone with super deep pockets and a high tolerance for risk, I feel like the upsides outweigh the downsides for sure compared to high ticket dropshipping. And really what I would say gets into the realm of building your own websites and monetizing those websites by selling stuff on them.
Yeah, this is really the game of, like you said, deep pockets, high risk, and the willingness to play the long game. Because I think we'll get into this a little bit more, but this water bottle here, so what is this making like profit wise?
So I just I don't know if you probably can't see this on my screen. Maybe I should just pull up a calculator. So according to this, we have this is like a dream sales rank. Like,
yeah,
you're in the top 600 products for sports and outdoors. which is pretty crazy. But if we get into it here, say we have, you know, we have $22.99, is it? Ah, it's so hard. Oh my god. I'm typing stuff wrong like crazy. $22.99 and it's selling 4,742 per month. So let's just say 4,700 per month. We're looking at 108,000 in sales per month. That is absolutely
$108,000.
$108,000. And that might seem like a lot if you're like getting started, but that's absolutely nothing. Especially when you compare it to high ticket dropshipping. And when you start to think about some of the costs that go into this, that have gone into this, that really takes away from the profit. And let me just run through a few of those costs. So one of them is going to be garnering all these reviews. Now, I'm sure that they gave product away. Like, this is just the nature of the beast on Amazon. You know, you're giving stuff away. You're doing these review campaigns. Whether Amazon approves of it or not, you have to get reviews. That's the dirty truth if you want to get to this sales rank. Like, I don't – there is just no way that – how many reviews are there? Oh, almost 5,000 people have reviewed this without any sort of incentive. Like, I highly, highly doubt it. I could be wrong, but I highly, highly doubt it. And that's just the nature of the beast. So that costs money to get those reviews because you're giving stuff away at a discount typically. And just even if you're not, just the marketing of it to get, you know, that's a whole job in itself. So you have the reviews. The next thing you have is the actual inventory cost. So I don't know how much these water bottles cost, but say, I mean, should we go on Alibaba and do a quick?
Yeah, why not? Why not? And I do want to emphasize the point that you use the phrase can be. Like, Amazon FBA can be a great way to make money. And this is an example of someone that's having what you would say is great success with Amazon FBA. We're not even getting into the weeds of like all the failed water bottles that are out there or, you know, that have come and gone or are just not ranking well. This is top 100 water bottles on Amazon. And right, according to this calculator, they're only doing 100,000 in sales.
Right. Honestly, when I typed in that calculation and I pressed enter, I was a little bit disgusted. I was like, I don't know. Like, I wouldn't even want, like, you couldn't even pay me to have, maybe that's an exaggeration. Maybe you could pay me to
have. Well, you don't have customer service. You don't have, you know, some other things, but $100,000 in revenue a month. We're going to look at the, you know, customer service is just one aspect of it. There's other factors that have to go into play when you're going to be having a business like this.
Right. So let's just say, I mean, I'm looking through Alibaba here. Let's just say these water bottles cost $2 each. And we're selling how many of them per month?
4,700.
4,700. Okay. So we have 108. I wish we could write these here. We're selling 4,700 times $2 each. So that's pretty good for the inventory costs. So that's really not
that's
bad. Not
included. That's freight on board, Jeff.
Right, right. And shipping costs have skyrocketed. So it's hard to estimate what the actual landed cost of this stuff is.
Don't you have that calculator of like, can't you go on Amazon FBA and they give you the FBA calculator, etc.?
We can do the FBA calculator, but I'm just trying to figure out. Oh, you're saying, but that's not including shipping.
Amazon's going to take a fee.
Right.
Right. There is the shipping cost. That's going to be some sort of factor in there.
Here we go. So if it's not clear here, we're not exactly FBA experts, but we're just looking at some numbers here and comparing it to other things, because I don't think the numbers on Amazon FBA make much sense for beginners. So we have the item cost. We have the monthly cost of goods sold. Should we say it's $4 landed per product? I don't want to, you know.
Is that a good estimate? I don't know. You've done more.
I haven't done water bottles. I don't know.
Okay. Well, let's say that. So where are we at here?
$13.55 to get this shipped with, you know, with getting it here, getting it shipped. I think this is probably accurate. This is probably accurate. This is like 33% or something, around 30% margin. No, am I stupid? 9 divided by 22. Yeah, it's around 40% margin after of the sale price, which I think is reasonable.
I think that's pretty good. If at the end of the day you're pushing 40% margin on a product, that's ideal. Landed,
right?
In Amazon, ready to go. So $944, and then Joe, let's multiply that by the 4,700.
So we have 44,000 in profit per month, which is pretty good, actually. You know, that's nothing to sneeze at, for sure.
It's nothing to sneeze at, but this is where I think it starts. This is the whole attractiveness of FBA, right? You could look at, you start looking at these calculators, you're looking at AliExpress, and you're like, oh wow, I can make $44,000 a month profit. But what happens?
The inventory. You need to constantly be refreshing and restocking. And when you combine the costs of the inventory, so you're getting low, your sales volume is increasing. Okay, great. Now you got to double up in order, like the same amount or double the amount as last time. So your bank account goes down again. Not to mention all of the costs I talked about before, garnering all these reviews and all that kind of thing. So
that's a cost, Joe. You have to consider that. How much are they paying to give out free water bottles for reviews, or they're using some service?
Right. Well, that's what I was saying before, is it's been no small task, no inexpensive task. Even though this listing looks super nice when we run some of the numbers, even after you consider, like, you know, you got to rebuy the inventory and do all that. There's just so many hidden things, such as getting these reviews, rebuying the inventory. When you plug it in, when you look at the net profit on this calculator, it looks nice. And this brand, this product, they're probably doing pretty well for themselves, but it's been no small task, and it hasn't been cheap to get them to this place. That is the point.
Yeah, with any big FBA brand you're seeing that's high in the rankings, they probably haven't even taken profit, if we're being honest.
Yeah.
A good friend of the podcast, Stephen Burgess, who we've had on to talk about Kindle, and now he does land and all this stuff. We've worked closely together for a while. He was actually doing FBA for a period of time. And I think when I talked to him recently, he said he was kind of scaling it down, but or looking to sell it. But the thing was, he had been doing FBA for years, like his own brand, and he had not taken any profits. Because you know what you want to do? If you want to really get your brand popping, you have to constantly reinvest all of it back into the brand.
Right.
Whether that's buying more inventory, running more ads. Joe, we're not even looking at, are they running ads for these products? You could have an inflated sales rank because you're willing to just sell everything at cost. And you're running Amazon PPC ads. Or you're paying TikTok influencers.
Mike, I want to make a list here because I feel like we've just run through so many different things that are part of getting an Amazon listing up to, you know, kind of ranking and banking. But I feel like it's kind of been easy to lose track of everything that we've been.
Let's make a notepad and compare what it takes to get an Amazon FBA brand off the ground versus what it's going to take to get a high ticket store off the ground.
We got review garnering. We got inventory purchasing. We have
Amazon PPC.
Oh. Amazon PPC.
Influencer marketing. You know that they're doing it. You look at the pictures. This is all. This is built for friggin' TikTok. Seriously.
Yeah. Look at it. On a yacht, you could be doing this. You could be staying hydrated on a yacht.
Yeah, don't drink the seawater, but you should have this water bottle.
Anyway, so where are we writing this down? What else? What else do we have on here?
Well, you have the upfront cost. If we're going to exclude that, but this is all after the upfront cost. Once it gets into the door, this is what you have to do.
Supplier relations. What else?
Well, we can even get into competitiveness now. Because this is just one of a zillion time marker water bottles that probably exist.
Right, but how could we account for that on this list?
Well,
I feel like all these are like costs that...
These are costs, but we're also not looking at times they may have to slash their own price at their own profit for the sake of competing and upholding their sales rank.
Oh, I would say constant sales rank competition. Like, you know, you got to constantly stay ahead.
Yep.
So, and the thing is with this, which I'm sure we'll get to when we talk about high ticket dropshipping and how it compares or website creation in general, is that, yeah, with high ticket dropshipping, you have advertising costs and you are competing for Google shopping rankings and search rankings. But the thing is that without the inventory, like, it matters much, much less.
Well, you could slash virtually all these things besides for advertising cost.
Right, but I'm saying that ideally, you know, you're always competing for rankings of some sort, whether it's in Google, whether it's in Amazon. But when you're competing for rankings and have inventory costs, I feel like it's a whole different game.
Yes, you're constantly working against all these numbers together, right? Like, you know, you're gonna have to spend X amount of dollars on inventory. Because if you run out of inventory, that also is going to screw up your rank, right?
Yeah.
You have to run out of inventory, or you have to buy more inventory. You have to keep track of what other competitors are selling at. Do you need to undercut or, you know, just get down to their level? Now you have to consider, okay, I got to get a marketing budget in here. And so that $44,000 profit in the beginning looked very sexy. But when you start to chip away at it with all these different things, it very, very quickly dwindles down into something that is a lot of overhead for not a lot of profit.
Right.
So,
and so, yeah, I think that's the whole point here, is that Amazon FBA, not a bad business model. I would say it can be a great business model. But unless you're really looking to go crazy and have deep pockets and tolerate risk and being – it's not all it seems on the surface.
Yeah. Amazon FBA, I would say, is the most sellable business model. So when it comes to actually the creation of an asset and being able to get a good multiple out of it.
Is that true, though? Because right now we have a deal pending on Empire Flippers. We're in the inspection period right now of a blog site. I mean, it's not a huge sale, but what is it, 60-something thousand? It sold it in a couple days.
That's true. But I'm kind of saying, for number one, for selling physical products. Right. And when you look at, like, the multi-million dollar businesses, how easy is it to get there with a blog site versus FBA? I'm just saying, I feel like it's real. It's if you're going to have a really, really big exit, talking 7-8 figures, it would probably be much quicker and easier to sell an FBA business at that multiple versus like a dropshipping site.
Right.
A blog site, I don't know. I don't really know anybody that's done that. Well, your friend, Joe, I don't know if I should say his name. Was his exit for?
He's had a 7-figure exit.
Do you know how long it took him to sell it? And
not that long, like a month or something.
Okay. Well, there you go. Blogs are just as good. But yeah, for physical products, for talking drop, it's better than dropshipping, I'd say, for having a 7-figure exit. Probably easier. Because you have aggregators that are just looking to swoop up, you know, these products, these private label products.
Yeah.
So whereas, you know, you don't have as much venture capital money for people buying dropshipping stores.
Right. So another thing I want to say is the Chinese competition, which we didn't really talk about. We've talked about competition here with FBA, but, you know, there's no saying, I don't know if this is like a Chinese brand or not. I mean, it's all it's made in China. But the thing is you don't know, there's people in China watching these things like hawks. So if you have a successful listing and yeah, you might be doing well that 1 month, there's no reason to think that there's not going to be 20 different Chinese sellers, like, you know, changing things, like putting in the minimal effort to change things to get the listing up to pass the just the brand inspection, like the brand thing on Amazon that they I forgot what it's called. But anyway, yeah, expect more listings to be popping up with Chinese factories that are going to beat your cost.
Yeah, exactly. We could probably look at like the rank history of this item. But again, this is an example of somebody that's doing it with success right now in this moment in time. Where will they be next month? Where will they be in 1 year? And what did it take them to get to this point?
Right.
These are all the unknowns. The only thing that you can see with Amazon FBA, and what makes it so appealing, is you look at the sales rank, you look at what they're probably getting it for, and then you look at what their net profit probably is, or their gross profit, and you're like, holy cow, they're making $44,000 a month doing nothing. But they're doing a lot, they've invested a lot, they've risked a lot, and it could all be taken away by their own supplier that's making the water bottles for them. So these are all things that need to be considered.
Absolutely. And I'm sure there's ways to kind of prevent that from happening. But like, you know, you have like agreements with them and stuff like that. And I'm sure the big boys have this well managed. But the point is, if you're just getting started, good luck managing all of this.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, this is not about the seasoned FBA investor or entrepreneur, to use that
word. I remember when I was we were trying to get, I was selling a lot on Amazon. This was like 2015, 2016. And I was starting to get into the private label, you know, experimenting with it. And the whole thing was going to the Canton Fair, you know, taking the 20 plus hour flight to China. And the truth is, I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
I'm not willing to, you know, the people that were really deep in this game, it was like their life.
Yeah, it wasn't some passive business model they're at home taking it ease doing, even though that's what it looks to be on the outside as a take it ease business model.
Right.
But it's really not. Even you and our friend Julian that we met at the Ezra Fire.
Oh, man, I'm surprised he wasn't more bald, because every 2 seconds there was something going wrong with Amazon.
Yeah, and he was a warrior in all the spirit of the word. You know, he had multiple brands. He wasn't like, you know, high profile guy with all these crazy listings. He was like an average guy, you know, had good Amazon listings, et cetera, you know, and a bunch of different unique products, but it was always something. It was always something going wrong.
Yeah.
You know, he was always looking for the next like gimmick or loophole to get ahead in the Amazon system. And I think that is a huge point as well. Amazon FBA success is very, very loophole driven. And it's just not a good way to play. Even Kindle was like this. Maybe less loopholes now, but, you know, getting the reviews. Again, Amazon FBA, they don't want you to have reviews, but you have, they don't want you to rather go out and solicit reviews, but you have to get reviews to have success.
Right.
You need to get ahead in the ranks. How do you do that? You give away product, you run ads at cost, whatever you got to do. But people are scratching and clawing to get to the top of these rankings, and they will cheat. They will go gray hat, black hat, whatever they have to do to get to those top spots because there's so much money there.
And you know what? There's a Chinese operation right behind you that is willing to, you know, have like some sort of computer farm willing to do whatever it takes to get to the top of Amazon.
Yeah. So if you're some guy or girl at home, maybe you have $10,000 saved up, $20,000, whatever, even 50, is this a worthwhile way to invest your time and your money? I don't know.
I want to add this, Mike. You know, of course you can garner an email list on Amazon. You know, I don't think you're actually supposed to, you're not supposed to, again, another loophole trying to get people to sign up for your email list through like an insert or like a postcard or something that comes with the product. You're not supposed to do this. But back to the original point, you don't have like a customer list like you would with iTicket dropshipping.
Correct.
And then, you know, whatever. It's just another thing. You don't control or own the customer in any way. Amazon controls and owns the customer.
Correct. So why don't we take a look at dropshipping at this point? We're almost halfway through the episode already. The time flies, Joe.
So I thought it would be, you know, I want to do this in a separate episode, Mike. I thought it would have been interesting to find high ticket dropshipping products to sell on Amazon. I think there is a lot of potential to do niche research that way, but we'll have to save that for another episode because, you know, a lot of times when you get into the expensive stuff on Amazon and you look at stuff that's with a terrible sales rank, I feel like there's a lot of, there's a lot you could find that you might not think of, but anyway, so dropship, what do we want to say about this?
Well, why don't we go and, find maybe a similar, we can look at a dropshipping website, or we could find a product that's being dropshipped on Amazon maybe and find that website and kind of talk about what they could be going through profit wise and everything else.
This comment.
Oh my God. you click it.
Trevor says, I thought about investing in an FBA wholesale automation program last year, 40K, and doing it by the books. Might still invest in it at some point. When 40K is not much, they're called Ascend Ecom.
Don't do it, Trevor.
I don't know, man. I don't know what. I feel that like there's no way that. So why don't you tell us like how they, I don't even really want to get into this the whole Amazon automation thing, like, you know,
I don't believe in this shit, dude.
No,
everybody would be doing it. They go up, guaranteed ROI. Go to the top. How do they do it? Go down a little bit.
Well, I was just looking at their timeline here, and I feel like the timeline says enough. Is like they're saying like 3 to 6 months is when you're going to start hitting your
revenue. We've got to do a deep dive on these things and like make a video about like what – I don't know. I feel like if you looked at the fine print on this, something will be up because how could you guarantee ROI?
All right. I feel like there's no, you know, if I put my money into an index fund, there's no guaranteed ROI. If I put my money into a single successful stock, if I put my money in GM or Tesla or, I don't know, ExxonMobil, something that people use every day, there's no guaranteed ROI.
But well, isn't why Kevin James is getting what the fuck is his name? Kevin David?
Yeah.
Isn't that why he's getting in trouble?
I think so, because he was guaranteeing ROI.
Yeah, that's like a whole SEC violation, right? Like I was watching the Bernie Madoff docuseries actually, and this came up too. It was like his firm never lost money. It was constantly basically they were guaranteeing ROI. And this is, they're like, you can't do this.
Right.
So how could this person be guaranteeing ROI? It just doesn't.
Right. And I'm saying you can invest in the biggest companies in the world, you know, the most consistent, most successful companies, and there's no guaranteed ROI. So you're telling me that I'm going to invest in some random Amazon automation company and I'm going to have guaranteed ROI? There's no way.
Yeah. I don't want to derail from the episode too much, but maybe we can come back at the end and look at this more. But okay, let's look at a dropshipping store and see what's going on here.
Yeah. All right.
Tim Skells. My friend bought into one of these at 30K, and basically after a few months, he had made $8,000 back. Then everything became a problem and he ended up just losing $22,000. Well, interesting to hear more about that. Interested to hear more about that. I guess that is that an ROI? If you get some return on your investment, if you get a non-zero return, is that an ROI? Anyway, I don't know how you got here, Joe, but we're here. Firstclasshumidors.com.
Yeah. Humidors, I think, are an underestimated this is a wine cabinet. Let's look at it. I want to look at a cigar cabinet, but yeah, an underestimated high ticket dropshipping product. I have always thought that there's a lot of potential in it with like a cigar themed store, because I feel like, first of all, there's like a passion behind it. And I feel like not that I smoke cigars, but I feel like if that's the thing you're into, you know, you're worried about, oh, you know, I'm going to keep it at this temperature. You know, I got these Cubans sitting in here for the past 10. I don't know.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Like the wine cabinets too, I'd say on this.
Yeah.
It's like a rich habit.
Yeah.
Or rather, rich people can be very passionate about it and will invest a lot of money into doing this type of thing.
Right. So let's just say you sell this humidor for $3,000. Or this is a wine cooler, actually. Sorry. Where's my calculator? Oh my god. Say you sell it for $3,000. After ad spend, just hypothetically, you're making $450 per sale. So 15% on the $3,000. Because yeah, you have, you know, ad spend, you have all this other stuff. I mean, ad spend is really the only thing, but you're not looking at the heavy fees taken away from the Amazon calculator, which they're going to take like 15% or whatever.
Yeah.
So you have $450,000, one sale, no inventory purchased.
And it's done.
And it's done. Yeah, it's done.
No reinvestment necessary.
You don't have a bunch of humidors sitting at the warehouse that you need to move because you've purchased 50 of them. And now you got to move these quickly. It's just you. It's $450 in your pocket.
And this is like nothing crazy type of margin, 15%. Like, I wouldn't consider that great. And I wouldn't consider it super terrible. Yeah, run of the mill, average, maybe slightly below average for a dropshipping product.
Right.
$450. And that's just one sale. You do one of those per day. What are we at, Joe?
Let's say you do one every 2 days just to, okay, you know, get a little conservative with it. You do one sale every 2 days. You're looking at a profit of $6,750 per month.
Yeah.
Which, And if you do that consistently, I feel like we do the same calculation over and over again. You do that consistently, you're making $81,000 per year profit on your store. And say you sell it for 3.5x, you've come away with almost $300,000. Now, there's no way that I can make that look as flashy as some of the FBA numbers. Because look at that. You're getting 4,000 sales and it's like 40% margin. This doesn't look that flashy. But the risk was so much less. And I don't know. I feel like it's more, you're just dealing with so much less nonsense than this. Yeah, there's some stuff that could come along, like, you know, chargebacks, some issues with suppliers, but it's nothing compared to the Amazon FBA list.
Well, we're talking about $10,000 a month profit here. So what would we have to get to get to that $10,000 a month? If it was $350 you're making per sale, you need what, one a day?
I think it was $450. Oh, no, whatever. $350, yeah, times 30. Now, one sale a day. And another thing, Mike, when we first got started doing drop shipping, we didn't have all the ad knowledge that we know now. We don't have all the FBA knowledge that we know now, or not the FBA, the SEO knowledge that we know now. But what we did was we knew that, okay, we have a way to make this work at like a minimum, kind of like this, if we do these things, we'll make some sales and we'll get some profit. We don't know how to scale stuff yet. So what did we do? We made like four or five stores. And that's the other thing, is that you want to add another FBA product? You want to diversify? Good luck. You're dealing with all this stuff again from the start. You got to get all the reviews again. You got to buy all the inventory again. You got to build up your Amazon listing again. You know how to build a dropshipping website? Even if you don't know how to get it to, say you know how to get it to $1,000 per month. You don't know how to scale your ads. You don't know how to do SEO or whatever. You don't want to spend more. You don't want to, you know, you just want to operate it small, lean, slow. You just do it again. The less risk you take, you could just repeat, repeat, repeat.
Yeah. Not only can you scale up, you could scale out. And you could scale out within a day.
I think that is the primary
The out. Flexibility is what people who are not making a lot of money online right now need to understand. With that water bottle, the profits up front look sexy, but it will take over your entire life and it will screw you, because you will have to commit everything to keeping that product, to keep the rank up, keep the inventory coming in. And if something goes wrong, you've had so much invested in it that it would ruin you. Versus, we could throw up a store in a day. I mean, realistically, when we first started, it took us 2 weeks. That's not a long time. How long is it going to take you to converse with the people in China, get the product negotiated, get it in the door, get the description all nice, get the reviews going, get the PPC going, you start to get the rank going good, you got to juice it up even higher. This is like, I mean, at one point, we had so many stores, it was like, if one failed, who cares?
And the beautiful thing is, you know, again, this is something that's underappreciated. And, you know, we've joked about this when we've had stores in the past. We have a store doing, you know, 500, 600K in sales right now. We could go delete it.
I mean, the store that we sold for $650, Joe, there were times where you were like, I'm going to shut down the store right now. Because the store was a pain in the ass.
Yeah, you could have a store that's a pain for sure.
You had your mouse on the button a couple of times.
I did. But that's the beauty. When you have a low commitment business model, this is really everything. This is everything. Low commitment. I want a business model that I could delete and walk away from.
Yeah. Because let's say your water bottle business, it's not making $44,000 a month. Maybe it's only making $2,000 a month. And you, again, you're flowing in the inventory. You're doing all these things to uphold it. There is a point where it's just not worth it. It's not worth the upfront money you have to invest every single month just to keep that $2,000 a month business flowing. With dropshipping, a $2,000 a month dropshipping business is so low maintenance and it's so low overhead that there's just no point to not keep it around and just start another store. So, and that's, again, another key point is like you could have all these things running, low overhead, low commitment, and then you want to sell one, boom, you just sell one off.
Yeah. I was actually, you know, like this point, we've never really put it into word. Maybe we have said this before, but I'm starting to realize now the power in this. I was talking to someone that had a, they had a food business. They had a crepe business. They sold crepes and he worked, you know, working super hard, ended up exiting the business for $100,000. But you can imagine all of the, like the nonsense that he had to put up with to get the crepe stand up, get the equipment, you know, he's trying to advertise, doesn't know how to advertise. But the thing is, he's so committed to this one stand. And it's not like he could snap his fingers and then go open another website somewhere else. So he literally cannot scale out.
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of dropshipping and building and developing websites, is that you can scale out because the overhead is virtually zero.
I think this is our claim to fame. This is really what we've never kind of spoken about it out loud and planned it out this way, but doing things in a way that always gave us the opportunity to scale out instead of scaling up is what got us to the point that we're at.
Yeah.
Otherwise, if you can only scale up, that's how you get Shark Tank. You just have to commit more and more hours, manifest, double down, lean in, 10X. Until, because every brand, every store, whatever you're doing has a sort of what do they call it? Like an asymptote. If you're looking at the graph of how something, you know, to getting it to $10,000 a month, to get it to 20, to get it to 100,000, there's going to be levels of effort you have to put in to get it to those numbers. And so for us, we decided to do things in a way where rather than try and invest a whole bunch of money into doing things or put in a whole bunch of effort, we said, hey, okay, this thing we have going right now is at a natural ceiling.
Yeah.
We could put in more effort to gain the knowledge on how to get it to the next level, or we can just do that exact same thing again. And instead of getting this $5,000 a month asset to $10,000 a month, we just make another $5,000 a month asset.
Yeah. And Mike, I was going through I was just scrolling through my phone with this crepe guy. And his mind was blown because I was like, look, you know, I got this, the Shopify store. You know, we're at 214K this month, whatever. And I was like, oh, yeah, look, this is Google Analytics on one of my other sites. There's like 36 people on there right now. And, you know, ranking and banking. And meanwhile, I just, you know, I was at jiu-jitsu. You know, this is all going on in the background. And I'm just scrolling through these websites showing him. And he's like, his mind was blown.
Yeah.
And that's, yeah. If you want to take it ease, that's what you got to do.
Yeah. And the truth is, if you have one thing that you've just been working to scale up, you're sitting on a one-legged stool. If it falls, it's not good.
We've been on the one-legged stool before. And I feel like the whole, you know, when Amazon...
We sell one-legged stools, actually.
When Amazon back in the day treated us like a fleck of dust.
Oh, you're talking about Kindle, right? Yeah.
You know, Kindle, FBA, you know, when they showed us that they can take all of our income from us with the click of one person in India, you know, we said no more. We said, we're not going to have a one-legged stool anymore. We're going to scale out without scaling up.
Yeah. And this is, like I was saying in the beginning of the episode, you're putting in all this energy, you're putting in all this money, and who's getting it? Jeffrey Bezos, China. You're working all just one thing. You're working it up as high as you can, but it can all come crashing down. Amazon loses a shipment of your friggin' mouthwash.
Yeah.
Whatever. You have so much in one basket, and that's just not the way. So, Joe, I gotta drain the Charmeleon, and then we'll go to a...
Me too. But I'll go first.
Yeah, I'm going first. Screw you.
All right, so let's take some of these comments. Okay. I saw someone makes around $1 million a month profit with Amazon wholesale on a popular supplement products. I'm thinking of doing that once my dropshipping store goes well. Fernando, listen. Let's get back to scaling out without scaling up. Me and Mike, despite I would say, you know, we're in a good financial situation, I still don't like to put my money into things because once you have the skill set to build websites, there's no reason to invest huge amounts of money. You just scale out. You make things with very little cost and you just add another income stream on. If you're making around $1 million a month profit with Amazon selling supplements, I don't know who's saying this, but there's a lot that went into it before that. It's not like they just snapped their fingers and they got to $1 million profit a month. They probably put a lot of money into the business to get to that $1 million profit per month. And it's probably not a take it easy operation by any stretch.
He saw someone. Where did he see them in real life?
Yes.
He saw them on YouTube.
Oh, there he is.
The $1 million profit a month man.
All right, listen, I got a stream of consciousness I need to unleash.
We got to get our prostates checked. We can't even hold it in for a freaking 40-minute stream.
Yeah, I'll check yours. You check mine, all right?
Okay, let's go. Yeah, Fernando. The whole supplement thing, it was like I was saying before on the stream. We have a friend who's been on the show. He was really into Kindle. He did really well with Kindle, actually. And, you know, he also was doing a supplement business. And it took years and years. And he was reinvesting the profits of that business every single month to try and build the brand. And as far as I know, he never really got it to having a multi-million dollar exit. Instead, he kind of realized it was just a lot of work. And, now he does land. I don't know whatever happened to his supplement business. He still has it maybe, and he's taking it easy on it a little bit more, or maybe he sold it, but he ultimately decided it wasn't worth it. And that's something I want to get into a little bit when Joe gets his headphones back in. But Joe, I can't hear you.
What happened?
No, I was just going to say, you know, with this whole thing we're talking about with like inventory, and, you know, you throw in a whole bunch of money on the inventory and then you get out, say, 20% on that. You $100,000 worth of inventory gets you $20,000 profit.
Yeah.
I feel like that whole idea has also just been thrown on top of its head because of land.
Well, yeah. Well, that's a whole separate – that's a whole – another
– Well, I was making the point again because our friend Stephen Burgess, he was doing the supplements.
Yeah.
And then now he just does land because he realized like just the overhead cost of doing this to get a 20% return out is it's just not – there's better things to do. So that's just the point I'm making.
I mean, absolutely. That's the thing. If you have to invest a large sum of money into a business, I would rather just buy a piece of land, a piece of real estate. You know, my rental property, like, I feel like it's way more valuable than any sort of online business that I could buy. And that's because the operating costs are so low. You know, it's there. Like, it's not subject to the volatile whims of the internet. People need a place to live. So, yeah, I just feel like when you're looking at strict, when you're talking about putting large sums of money in to get something like 20% out.
Yeah.
I want to do, you know, really, really hard things. I like online business is volatile, period. That's why I like to scale out rather than scaling up, because I want to just make something that's cash flowing for me as soon as possible, positive cash flow into our bank account as soon as possible, you know, while that's good. Because who knows what's going to happen in 5 years from now.
Yep, exactly. And people, I think, get too greedy with this whole thing, because we talk about scaling out instead of scaling up. You don't need that many businesses. You don't need that many income streams to live a pretty good life and to set yourself financially free. Everybody wants the one thing that's going to make them $10 million, $20 million when they're already not making that much money. Like, take the first step first and, you know, financial independence, retire early. That should be the goal of everybody before they jump to trying to make $10 million and go from, you know, the trap house to the penthouse.
Yeah.
Get your house paid off. Like, get yourself straight in a and well off in like every sense of the word. I mean, if you could have a middle class level house income and, you know, your house is paid off, whatever, it's like, at that point, no matter what happens, if you have something that's scaled up and it falls down, who gives a shit? You're already good.
Right.
And people don't want to take that step first. They want to just go straight to the Mega Millions.
And Mega Millions, you know, it's not even necessarily going to make you happy at the end of the day if you have some sort of, you know, Mega Millions Shark Tank victory. It's not even necessarily going to, you know, what I feel like what brings you happiness is the ability to, I mean, outside of like social things and other things, that like in terms of money, that brings you is the ability to have some sort of control over your own time. That's it. Once you have a decent lifestyle, like, what else do you need?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we're not like Mega Millions, but I feel like we're at the point that we could really, compared to people in history, like what we're doing right now is this a joke.
Yeah. I'm soft, Mike.
I know. So I don't know how to, can I change a tire? I don't even know. Can I fix the toilet? I don't know. But anyway, Nature's Cure. Do FBA businesses get higher or lower multiples than high ticket? I would say that they get higher multiples. But again, it comes with all these things that are you even going to be able to get it to the point of sellability or get it to the point of income that you desire, right? So, yes, FBA business, that, in my opinion, is the best thing going for it, is the multiple you can get. And again, there's a huge audience of what do you call it? Like private equity firms and venture capital and those people that are just willing to invest millions and buy your brand. But again, you got to take the first step first. You got to be able to get to $10,000 a month with a take it ease type business model before you're gunning for, you know, that large payout. Do we still suggest doing Kindle in 2023? I don't, because just the way that we've narrowed in on number one, blogging and land, I feel like the effort you have to put in on Kindle and the amount of money you have to invest, because books are constantly steering towards higher and higher quality. So if you want to put out a Kindle book series in the way that we were doing it in the past, it's going to be a few thousand bucks versus you could start a blog with that money. You could start a whole micro blog, or you could buy a piece of land, and those things are going to have an easier and higher, more consistent rate of return, in my opinion. Because again, with Kindle, you're in Amazon's playground. Like, there's a lot of things that go into it. There's a lot of risk. If you do something wrong, you're playing with their algorithm. Blog site, you throw $3,000, $4,000 in on a blog site. I mean, we'll get into this more, you know, after everything goes through with the pending site. Fingers crossed. But, you know, you could do a lot better and have your own asset just with one $3,000, $4,000 investment. You could buy a piece of land for $3,000, $4,000, sell it for $12,000,
Yeah.
It's just, there's other things to do.
I don't want to say too much, but so once we hopefully finalize the sale of this blog site, not too big, should be around like 60 something thousand, but I think it symbolizes what I would call the refinement of our portfolio strategy. And, you know, we've always had this portfolio strategy where we have the high ticket drop shipping, we have the land, we have, you know, all the business models that we talk about. But what we're kind of working on now, or what the sale of this blog site symbolizes, is the timing. The timing of, okay, I'm going to invest this money here now, and in 2 years, I'm going to exit when it hits this certain point. And I'm going to set it up to where it's going to hit its peak at a certain point, and then I'm going to sell it. So we'll get into that. And I think we're going to be talking a lot about that in the future, the timing of things.
Yeah. What application or system do you use to track expenses and profits?
Well, we use Google Sheets. used to use QuickBooks, but now, you know, mainly just using Excel, downloading bank statements. I would say you have high ticket dropshipping. I would say one of the cons is that the accounting is not as simple as Amazon FBA, because every order is a separate line item. But yeah, if you export all your Shopify orders, match it with your credit card and bank statements, then, you know, that should be all you need right there.
Jeff says he's in the store building trenches right now. I will be one of the success stories soon. Good. Love to have you on. Alex, also, do you use the advanced Shopify plan for your big high ticket stores? Our big stores, we started using Shopify Plus on.
We should do a Shopify Plus review. I have a good amount I have to say about that. I feel like we've
what are you gonna say?
I mean, I feel like we've talked about this amongst ourselves, like the whole process of the sales process, the support, you know.
Yeah.
In comparison to what it is, I feel like we could, you know,
get into that. Yeah, let's do that. Let's do that next time. Yeah, we use Shopify Plus. I mean, do we recommend it? It gives you some functionality that I think could be helpful. But ultimately, I think the way that we look at it is you get the best processor fee.
Yeah.
And you get, again, just more customizability as far as like checkout, automation stuff. And so if you could use those tools that they give you to just make one extra sale, that'll make you use those tools to make you one extra sale that makes you $2,000 profit, then it pays for itself. $2,000, you know, one sale, $2,000 each month can pay for Shopify Plus. So you got to work out your own math as far as what you feel like it could do to help you gain more sales. And we have used it for like customization stuff, like playing around with different carts and whatever. Has it been worth it? We'll have to do a deeper dive and see, but
we also got to take a deeper dive into our, I haven't really been following this, but our CRO journey.
That too. I mean, I'll say it right now. I feel like CRO is like some bullshit.
Did we flop with it? Like, you know, we keep, seems like some of the reports are nice, but I don't know.
I think so. Right now for our listeners, we're paying a company to basically do conversion rate optimization. And, you know, on one hand, I'm kind of happy to spend the money because it's stuff we would never, ever do on our own. And certainly we wouldn't be like tracking the math on it and doing the statistical analyses to see, okay, is this a significant change? Is it not a significant change? But I feel like they've still had trouble pinning down like, okay, this, like finding things that produce a really, really big change to make it worthwhile. So yeah, we'll have to see what they've done so far. I was going to email them and be like, okay, so like what's actually been like finalized and what's really worked? Because I haven't been paying too much attention to it.
Yeah.
Rod said, I've seen my high ticket drop, my high ticket dropping in revenue for the past 6 months. Have you seen a change in revenue with this economic downturn? No.
What economic downturn?
Yeah. No, we've had some of our best months actually within the last 6 months. And so.
No, I'm kind of being facetious, but like, I'm sure there are some industries that I think there probably is an economic downturn occurring. Like, I don't think we're in a boom, but I think, you know, we haven't seen it. And also, well, let's get to his next thing, because what I'm going to say plays into his next thing. He says, do you recommend focusing on one high-ticket dropshipping store after it becomes successful, or is it smart to open a different niche and have two incomes instead? I personally feel like when we started so many stores in a short time period, it had its pros and cons, but I feel like it gave us a lot of insight. And I feel like it's a good thing to do. Once you get a good handle on, you're making like, I would say even like $1,000 a month profit. I don't think it hurts to launch another store. As long as you're not, overextending yourself on expenses and, you know, all that. But I don't think it hurts. I feel like when we were getting insight into all different sorts of industries, I feel like that definitely helped us. And also, again, it's scaling out instead of scaling up.
Well, the scaling out helped us scale up.
Yeah.
Because it allows you to see what is something that's happening because of my lack of knowledge or it's just the industry. Like our first store, if we just had that one store and just tried our darndest to scale it up, I don't know if we would have made it.
Yeah, that is true. That is very true.
Even the stores that we, you know, our bigger stores, again, they were the result of, you know, the first few stores we started out with kind of gave us insight. It's like, okay, this is what is happening because of us. This is what is happening because of the niche, and really made, really gave us the ability to have those breakthroughs in knowledge where we could scale up. So,
and I like to have a pie that I could cut into multiple pieces and sell off a piece at any point, which again, I think really helped us, is being able to sell off different stores at different points, because it kind of just gave us like not only an influx of cash, but I don't know, I guess like a little boost mentally.
Dude, validation.
Yeah. Validation is important.
Very, very important. Gives you validation that what you're doing works. You've seen the entire journey from beginning to end. And that's certainly worth something. Even with selling a website, like some of the biggest complications come at the end. Because you're fighting over the P&Ls. You know, you got to make sure the website performs at the end of the, like, those final months. And even during the migration period. Because if it doesn't, it's all kind of for nothing. And so it's like, you got to learn how to walk the entire path.
Yeah. Check out Wave Apps. You can connect bank and credit cards for really accurate reporting and accounting. I haven't used it. My thing is like, I found like with QuickBooks and things that connect to your bank account, I feel like it introduces like a whole new like layer of things you need to monitor. I'm kind of enjoying, I mean, this comes with its own set of issues, but I'm enjoying of exporting from the bank, so direct from the horse's mouth, all the transactions, and then having them in a spreadsheet myself. I can work through them much quicker than kind of clicking around on an interface where, you know, then I got to validate that the bank statement is accurate with the app, and then it's a whole, I don't know. I like getting it, like I said, straight from the horse's mouth.
There you go. These hours always go by pretty quickly. Like, I feel like we never even really talk about anything.
Yeah, I don't know what we talked about, honestly. I feel like I think we got to retire these long episodes and start making shorts.
I was saying it because I'm trying to go longer, to be honest. I feel like if we start doing 2 hours, then we could really start, having the good conversations.
But, yeah, I don't know what to talk about, though. That's the thing. I feel like it kind of it's good that it kind of always goes in its own direction, and that's what we talk about. But I don't know how to, I don't know how to title that. I don't know how to plan it beforehand.
Me neither. But if people go to buildassetsonline.com/class, they can see something we've titled and planned beforehand and get a concise presentation and web class on how to build a seven-figure portfolio. Just as we've done, we've scaled out without scaling up. We've taken it easy. And you could see exactly how we did it too. So that's really it, Joe.
All right.
I mean, we gotta start making some tips, some YouTube shorts for sure, but you know, I think we just gotta pound out like a 2-3 hour episode and then just have someone just chop out the shorts, because I don't think I'm built to just make like a singular short on my own. Also, I don't do shorts, LOL. No, yeah, like how much is a short viewer worth versus somebody that's going to be willing to like watch your content for an hour?
Tim says he'll tap in and go all day.
I believe it. Yeah, we got to do the bowathon.
Yeah. $2. I mean, we could definitely with this StreamYard thing, we could definitely bring on people.
Yeah.
But yeah. I always thought that would be cool.
Yeah. You've always wanted to have the AM radio show, Joe.
Yeah, I think it makes for like an easy, like someone comes on the show and then, you know, you talk to them and
we got Tim from Ohio calling in. Hey guys, just want to say I've been doing drop shipping for a year now. It's really great. Anyway, that's it. We're done here. Buildassetsonline.com/class. Go there, enroll in the Elite Fleet, create a high ticket dropshipping store that you can scale out or scale up and then sell for 5 figures, 6 figures, 7 figures. Who knows? It's all up to you. So until next time, take it easy.